the Rashi that I said, I mean, he makes the distinction why, in the case of the Mishnah, he assumes that it is Bechinam, it was free of charge, whereas in the Gemara that they cite over here, they say that the reason that, you know, the person, if the midwife accepts pay and she refuses to do it, then it's going to create bad feeling. So why not in the case of Bechinam, you know, to create bad feelings? So Rashi says, because she can get out of it by saying to the woman, look, I'm sorry, I can't help you because I depend upon what you pay me in order to be able to make a living. That's what it is. Okay? There's no sigh for my, the food that I eat. I have to do that. Okay. All right, so getting back to the text right now. Omar of Yosef. Rabbi Yosef said, "Bischar shorei mishomeva." See, so he gives the reason over here that a Jewish woman can accept pay and do the job because of the fact, you know, that otherwise it would create bad feeling between Jews and the idolaters, right? So they asked the following question: "Sava Rabbi Yosef lameva." Tell me, did Rabbi Yosef also mean to say, "Ulude ovedes kechovim b'shabato, b'schar shore, mishum eva," that if a Jewish woman serves as a midwife to an idolatrous woman, right, on Shabbos, so is she also permitted to accept pay for it?
To do both the delivery and accept pay on Shabbos.
Right.
But
she can pay
it
after Shabbos.
But can she get paid for working on Shabbos?
Right.
She can do a favor, but can
I do it? Right. In order not to create bad feeling. So, Amalei Abayu, so Abayu said to him, well, wait a minute. As far as Shabbos is concerned, the Jewish woman can get out of this deal. Why? Yochlo l'meim Allah, she can say to the, you know, to the Goyim, the don the mintere shabato mechalulinat alayhu. It says, we Jewish women, we keep Shabbos, and in that case, we are permitted to serve as midwives to a Jewish woman who gives birth on Shabbos. Okay? Because we ourselves also keep Shabbos, and we're permitted to be mechalul Shabbos, you know. In other words, to do those things. Those actions are necessary, you know, in order to help the baby, right? In other words, there's certain things, like, well, let's say to cut the cord or something like that, you know, which we can do.
Water.
To heat water, exactly. I mean, these are some things that you could do, right? Right. But, who? In your case, you, the Lomin Trey Shabbato, you don't keep Shabbos. Then we're not permitted, that's the point, we're not permitted to violate Shabbos. So the question is, so Rav Yosef the Meimar, so Takin, did Rav Yosef mean then to say, Anuki Bischar Shori Mishum Eva, that to nurse the child, now we're talking about nursing, okay, as compared to midwifery, right? To nurse the child for money, this would be permitted also to a Jewish woman, you know, to nurse a, you know, the goyish child, Mishum Evo, because she would create bad feeling if she didn't do it. So Abaye said to him, she could even get out of that deal too. Yochlo l'meimar, she could say as follows: Ipinu yehi, if the woman is unmarried, then she could say, Beino lin suve, says, I can't nurse the child because I have to find a man to get married. Okay. I have to find somebody to get married to. I don't want to spoil, you know, my prospects. Because It's a little bit.
A problem
here. We understand. Right, right. You're absolutely right. So that's why I'm a little bit puzzled by this business also. It's absolutely right.
Let's imagine that they may have had hormones.
Maybe.
Well, maybe they thought that the Avodasauras were so dumb they wouldn't know the difference.
Who knows? Maybe we're talking about a woman who's a divorcee. It's already been married. Possibly.
That's
I don't know.
And actually, these women probably would be the ones who might have to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
All right, we covered that.
Yeshus is she, and if she's a married woman, Lekob is the Hamabapi Gavra. He says, I don't want to look ugly in the presence of my husband. In other words, my husband wouldn't like the idea.
You mean if she nurses a child, it changes her appearance?
Whatever, right.
Yeah. Well, that maybe is not exactly physical ugliness,
right,
to look bad in his eyes. You think that
that's... Yeah, whatever. She's looking for an excuse to get out of it. Then she'll find an excuse.
All right,
okay, that's the
creative.
Right, not important.
Creative
storytelling. So, Rav Yosef, so we have to say that Rav Yosef was of the opinion that Neymar to say, or the Tanya, that he would be in agreement with another thing. And now we go into something else, but it would seem to be in line with Rabbi Yosef's thinking. It says, Ha'ovdei kechovim, idolaters, v'roi behema daka, and likewise those shepherds of behema daka, remember this means like goats and sheep, okay? And we learned that they are bad for Eretz Israel because why? They eat up the pasture, they eat up the land. Okay, so these people are not always, you know, considered the finest life.
Sheep?
Yeah, sheep
goats,
and goats.
Goats do the same thing?
Yeah, I'd say sheep and goats is behema daka.
Yeah.
That's how it's classified. Right. Whereas a cow, a bull, this is a behema daka. So, at any rate, there is a teaching that says that these people, lo malin and lo meridin, let's say, if they fall into a pit, so in that particular case, we neither help them get out of it, nor do we put them into it.
You're talking about the small behemoths.
We're talking about shepherds.
Because in other words, there was bad feeling against them. There was bad feeling against them. Okay, they didn't think that the shepherds were necessarily okay. We have to take a look at Tosfos over here for a moment. So Roim Behemadaki, you see over right opposite over there. It says Perish Bishelohen. Right? The Bishabachirim, Hokamim Perakabu, Babasi, and so on, ain't other Bukhaite, the Lola. Alright, in other words, the point is that these people are doing it for themselves, but they're not doing it in order to earn a living, and apparently they are guilty of what we would call Gezela. In other words, they put their sheep or their goats into somebody else's pasture without paying anything for it, and so on. So this is the reason why, there's this bad feeling against them. Okay.
Kind of taking that for granted,
right?
Don't we, huh?
Right.
It doesn't
say that.
Yeah.
That's like saying that because one bad, like making it a class of people saying that they're all bad.
Yeah.
There isn't.
Yeah. Look, I agree with you. The point is, I mean, it's right.
Point,
yeah. Yeah. It says, of course it is.
But the whole, whole.
I mean, the Tosfos continues, it says, the rabbis were stricter when it came to shepherds, Sha'edom Sulim, Elim Rabbon. They don't consider them unworthy to testify, not valid to testify, except by rabbinic ordinance, but not, by the Torah. The Gam Heim Kishem Le'edus, Ishad. And also, they too, their testimony is accepted as valid in the case. I mean, in order to, let's say, to free a woman who, you know, the husband had disappeared and they know that the husband died. In that particular case, their testimony will free her so that she could remarry. Understand?
So that they allow.
So that they allow, right. So,
but you know, Dr. Miller, to answer what Emily was saying, you know, about coloring all of them, this whole idea of stereotyping, right throughout this whole Mishnah, the whole, whenever we talk about,
about the, in general, the Avedis, the idolaters, I agree with you.
Everything is.
There had to be a few good goyim.
but it's a broad brush against the whole,
you're right.
In everything that we've done so far.
Does this apply to Jewish shepherds, the shepherds too?
It applies to Jewish shepherds, but, you know, then I contrast it with, you know, the feeling of shepherds in the Bible, where generally, I mean, the shepherd is considered in the highlight. I mean, after all, if David was, Yaakov, David, I mean, you name them. I mean, there were eight sons and so on and so forth.
Brothers were all shepherds, right?
Right, right.
They did have sheep, too.
Sure. They had sheep and goats, absolutely. Right.
Yaakov approached the shepherds and asked them to roll it. He still didn't want to do it.
Yeah, so correct. Of course it's mixed. I mean, we realize there were good shepherds, there were bad shepherds. Okay.
But in terms of the Avodah Zarah, they're all bad.
Right.
That's
well, here we're not talking about, we're talking even about Jews.
Oh, in this case, as they mean
in this
the
case,
Jews
even Jews.
So even if a Jewish shepherd fell into a pit,
we're talking about Jewish shepherds over here,
As a matter of fact, the brothers of Yosef were shepherds, were not very good people.
So that, you know, they didn't always have it. And yet, I think, you know, the 23rd Psalm, what does King David say about the Rebbeinu Shalem Hashem Rovi, right? The Lord is my shepherd. So,
all right, that's good.
Under those circumstances, it's hard. So, as I say, you know, you're going to have mixed feelings with these things. Okay. Right, that's a tough thing. On one hand, things can be good, and on the other hand, you know, it doesn't sound
there's
right.
There's always, in literature, there's always this idyllic thing about shepherds.
Right.
They're off in the middle of nowhere. Because the
playing the pipes, you know.
Maybe the reality was that, especially in Eretz Yisrael, this is a small country. It wasn't a far-off place, the shepherds were actually that they were living fairly far from the
shepherds. So I guess you're right. The mixed results.
How can you get that from the mission? I don't understand. The mission has no mission of that.
No. No. It brings it in as a side point that maybe Rabbi Yosef, you know, who says that you are permitted to, let's say, to nurse
for wages.
So we'll see in a second. So we'll see in a second. All right. We gave the general, you know, neither up nor down, You don't either lower them or raise them, But he says, Asuki Bishar, but to raise them for money, then in that case, sorry, it's permissible. Why? Mishum Meva, because we don't want to create bad feelings. So Amale Abaye, so again Abaye says to him, let's think of some terutzim, right? You know what a terutz is. It's you know, an idea to try to get out of a bad situation. He says, Yochel Umalo, if he wants to avoid it, the second line from the bottom. Okay. It says, the person who is being offered money he could say to him, if he doesn't want to do it, they could say to him, Yochel Avalo, he could say, Kai Bari Aigro, right? My son is up on the roof. Well, in other words, I have to go and get my son down, okay? And if I don't get him down, he's going to die, as Rashi says. And I'd rather lose the money and save my child, okay?
It's
a
terrorist.
It's a terrorist. Right. Inami, or another possibility. Nakita li zibdo leve doar. I have to go to the post office. But Beidor over here doesn't mean the post office. As Rashi says, it means Ashilton Kavali's man liyom vad. Right? In other words, I got a summons from the government that I have to be in court at this particular time. And if I don't go, then Yotzes Chori Behefsedi, then I'll lose, you know, whatever I would gain by doing this. Okay? Today, as I say, Beidoar is the post office, okay? But in those days it meant a government building, a government office, let's say, a government office, okay? Could be the court or whatever it may be. Okay.
So in other words, you can make up a program.
Right, you can make up exactly. As I say, you say the Baba Meister, I say a Taylor, and so on, and all together. Right. But the person, man is in the pit. Okay? So
man
he says.
Is in the pit, and who are the people that are making the excuses?
So he says, he sees somebody up there, you know, up above. He says, help me. Help me get out. Right, and I'll pay you for it.
Right.
Okay, so if he wants to, the man feels he doesn't want to help him get out. So he gives him an excuse. He says that what you want to pay me is not worth it because I have something much more pressing. And my child is up on the roof. I got to get him down. Right, or. I have to. I got a summons to appear in court at this particular time, or something like that.
So I can't believe that this applies to Jewish shepherds too, right?
It applies to Jewish shepherds, right? Okay. So we have to say it applies to what kind of Jewish shepherds? The bad Jewish shepherds. Not again painted with a brush that every Jewish shepherd is like this. Okay?
No, it goes against how we read in Mishpatim,
right.
You're not supposed to go, even if you see your enemy.
Yes.
Fallen. You're not
right.
To go away from him.
Yeah, you're supposed to help him, of course, absolutely.
Directly,
right.
Contradiction.
So, you're absolutely right. So I have to say that conditions were such that they lived in a time when people did not live morally. They lived in very immoral circumstances, and even some Jews, obviously, were also guilty of not living in accordance with the ethics, the morality of the Torah, and so on.
But it may that this particular instance where he wasn't helping, but there's other people around here, so you don't know, maybe there's other people around.
Well, then in that case, they could offer to the other people. I mean, this is a possibility. In that case, he would say, I have to run to court, but Joe over here will help you get out, or something like that. But this is a possibility.
Yeah.
That's a possibility. I don't say that.
Well, think about this. No. The guy, Mr. A, refuses and walks away.
Yeah.
Mr. B does help him get him out.
Yeah.
How much is Mr. A's life worth after that when these guys who wouldn't be helped by Mr. A come after him?
Well, that's another
Giving him a good excuse to get out of it.
But that's why it says, Mishum Eivor, if you're afraid, you're going to create bad feeling, then in that case you could do it.
Well, see, that's just what they thought about it.
Right.
Incidentally, the chief rabbi of England does a weekly thing on the covenant thing. And he deals this week, the latest one that I just read, with the question of, are you permitted to lie? Is it all right in Judaism to lie?
Okay.
And he comes up with the idea that,
Under certain circumstances.
Right. That like Shalom Bayis, shall we say, is more important than truth.
Right.
At some point, in some cases.
Yeah, right.
And you have to...
Even the Rabbinic
Shalom. Yeah, well, and it gives
in the case of Sarah and Abraham.
Exactly,
right.
There
right.
is a quote
right.
That God gives Abraham, doesn't tell Abraham that Sarah said he was old.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they give that as the top reason why you are allowed under certain circumstances.
And what did we learn last week over here? Were they quoting about Yaakov and Esav?
Yeah, well, I think that...
Right, I mean,
that's what he was talking about, that particular portion.
Right.
And they talked about the so-called white lies.
Right.
It's not only a question of saving your own life, putting yourself in a bad situation, but also, Jew has to be very careful what he does, because wanting to have a propensity to God is for nothing.
Well, these things happen, unfortunately. Okay, let's see, what time is it now? Shall we identify the fact that tonight is the 29th of the month of December in the year 2004, and we're at the very bottom of Avodah Zarah, Daf Chaf Vav, Amud Aleph, in other words, the last line on Avodah Zarah 26a.
Right.
Now, we continue now with this whole business about the Evdei Kochavim, Rei Behema, and so on. Okay. So, number one. Tani Rabbi Abohu, Kamei de Rabbi Yochanan. All right. So, Rabbi Abohu gave the following tradition that he had. He recited in the presence of Rabbi Yochanan. Okay? And what is this tradition that says, so if the Kochavim, in other words, idolaters, the Roi Behema Dako, and the shepherds, you know, who take care of, you know, the small cattle, as we said, in other words, sheep or goats, Lo Ma'alin, the Lo Ma'alin. So what does Lo Ma'alin mean? That if they're down in the pit, then you don't raise him up, but for Lo Moridin means also by the same token you don't push him down into it either. Okay.
So why do they group idol workers and shepherds together?
Okay. The only reason that they're doing it is because in this particular case the shepherds are considered to be immoral people. Let's take a look at the choices that we have.
All right.
Okay. You see the heroin behemodako. Okay?
Yeah, right.
All right, so it says, Perish, b'shem ahen. In other words, when they are taking care of their own sheep, why? De'i b'shem acherim ha'amirim perikamid b'metzia, odom chayte v'loy loy. Okay? Because in the Gemara, in Bob Metzia, it says over there, maybe you came across it, I don't know, the rabbi, okay, that a shepherd who is hired for somebody else, he's not going to ruin his reputation by doing something immoral.
No,
okay?
Right.
We're not talking about sexual. We assume that a Jewish shepherd is not guilty of that. Okay? But what is he guilty of? He's guilty of that if he's taking care of his own flock, he's not going to be scrupulous as to where he lets them graze. In other words, he lets them graze in other people's property.
Right.
So this is the objection that they raised. I mean, because
they grouped him with the
idol worshippers. They were the idol worshippers, right. Yeah. Okay. Tuesday episode, okay.
No.
Okay. All right.
Fair.
Right. So that, therefore, right, if they're thrown into the pit or somewhere or other, they fell down over there or something, well, you don't help them get up, but by the same token, you don't push them down either, you see, okay?
Or lower them,
Right, or lower them. But I'm using a little more...
more active...
More, right.
Would you leave them to die?
Huh?
Would you leave them to die?
Well, the idea being, yes. In other words, they're such a menace to society that this is the way that we get rid of them. No,
just because they allowed their sheep to graze in someone else's
right, so plan. It shows that they don't have any moral scruples.
It must be more so.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
That's just as far as I say that, but I know.
Right.
Now, are we assuming then it's that someone else is another? It's a Jewish property owner?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it could also be a non-Jewish property owner.
But if it's a non-Jewish, then no,
but are we permitted, for example, to steal from a guy because he's a guy? Of course not.
Well, the note that Rabbi Yashkol gives here is a lot stronger.
Yeah.
He said the shepherd of small animals, when tending their own flocks, Tosfos says, generally allows their animals to graze in private fields, and thus were constantly guilty of robbery.
Hardened criminals,
who sin constantly out of a blatant disregard for the law, are treated very severely and forfeit the right to be rescued when their lives are endangered. Same applies to the ancient idol worshippers, who were officially violent and corrupt. Nevertheless, there was no license to kill them outright. In other words, you can offer them to a pit, but you're not going to kill them outright. Nowadays, one is obligated to do his utmost in order to save the life of an endangered individual, whether Jew or Gentile.
All right. So what he's telling you at the end is that we don't follow this rule.
Okay.
But again, we have to picture ourselves as being at that particular time when obviously the kind of people who were working as shepherds, you know, for themselves, they were guilty of this, and I don't know whether they figured that they might turn into a murderer or something like that.
Well, if they're challenged, maybe
they wouldn't hesitate to kill in order to defend.
I was thinking that if they allowed their sheep to graze on non-Jewish property, that they might endanger the Jewish community by creating hostility with their non-Jewish neighbors.
Okay.
And this could actually be a danger to the whole Jewish community.
Remember the last two weeks, I mean, we were talking about Meshum Eva. In other words, certain things are permitted, even though they said you shouldn't do it, in order to be sure that you don't create this animosity between the Jew and the non-Jew.
That's
correct.
A definite case.
Yeah. All right. It's not very easy. I mean, for us, being practically 2,000 years removed, it's a little bit hard for us to understand.
Apparently, it felt necessary to add that note at the end about what we don't know the
social circumstances. Maybe people who became shepherds during this time were people with maybe not the best reputation.
People who were thought to be
capable of doing, basically just knowingly letting their flock go.
I mean, they weren't doing it innocently, they were doing it knowingly.
We have a sort of a neutral, when we think of a shepherd, we don't think of him.
Right, I mean, as I pointed out, I mean, we say to Rabbeinu Shalom, right, or Hashem Rohi Lechsor, and we pointed out Moshe Rabbeinu was a shepherd, and David HaMelech was a shepherd, and so on.
Well, we have an idyllic view of the shepherd, and here we're getting a
right, that's true. Very true.
I'd like to take a Marxian view, if I may, of this, that maybe maybe the Admarim were landowners, because I remember all these in Oklahoma or all these westerns, but they always had battles between the farmers and the cattlemen,
right,
because the farmers were fencing their property so that the cattlemen go in and eat their corn or whatever.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And so maybe it was a possibility that they considered, you said they were robbers. I mean, it's hard for me as a person to think that somebody allows a 30 or 40 sheep to graze on land and eat thistles or grass, whatever, should be considered a robber. I mean, he's not doing the right thing. He's taking for free things that don't belong to him, but
robber
is something good, and it's real to put him in a category together with idol worship.
Yeah, that's what.
So maybe that's it. Maybe there's like an economic point of view here that crept in.
Maybe.
Just often.
Maybe. So yes, I want some
more. The fact is that they make it clear that it didn't continue that way.
Right. Right, of course. As I say again, I mean, so many hundreds and hundreds of years separate us from the conditions that existed in those days that it's a little difficult for us to understand. Except when we think about how many societies today that we're familiar with are lawless societies. No question about that. We're going to say that, for example, Iraq under Saddam was a law-abiding government or something like that, you know, a law-abiding country. No. We say that Nazi Germany and their attitude towards the Jews and so on. I mean, the Jews were a prey to them, I mean, there's no question. So where there was some possibility of a Jewish court that had some power, that's one thing. Of course, Jewish courts don't have that power anymore, so not even in Israel, I have to say. The power, for example, to punish people to throw them into the pit and then let them perish over there or something like that. No, of course not. Doesn't exist. Okay. No president today would even think of enforcing this kind of halakha.
We're talking about rescuing them
if they
fell in the pit.
If they fell, right.
Right.
But now the next line, you'll take a look. See, this is only half the story. I don't mean the next line, but the next three words after that. However, there was punishment that they gave, that they were able to give to Minim, and we'll have to go into in a few moments a discussion as to what it means, because it has various meanings. Meaning, number one, for Minim, are people who have departed from Judaism. That's one possibility. They've left Judaism. In other words, they used to use this to characterize the Christians. Okay? Right. The Christians.
No.
To characterize the Christians. They were Minim. Okay? And this is why, if you take a look at the Gemara and Brachas, they decided to add an extra bracha, if you remember, right? And that's called Birkas Haminim, Birkas Al Haminim, to be more precise. In other words, the bracha that we added against the Minim. And, huh? No, Ma'aminim would be those who believe. But Minim is something else. Min means literally from. It means a kind. It means in Hebrew today also sex. Sex. Min zachar min nekeva. Male or female. Right. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Well, no.
Right.
As usual, the doctor is elevating the discussion.
Yeah.
Frankly, mean also does mean sex. I mean, that's.
Of course. Chaye hamin is sex. No. Chaye hamin means sex, sexual life, of course. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, so it has different meanings. But in the Gemara, the idea of a minim over here is really those people who have departed from Jewish teachings, okay? And who actively oppose Jewish teachings, okay? We had a couple of agoras already. We had one about a fellow by the name of Yaakov Hamin. He challenged the rabbis on the interpretation of the pasuk and so on. So these were people who were constantly challenging the Jews as to how to interpret the scriptures. Okay, and it was to say that something that still exists even today. I mean, to take Christian scholars, and they'll take a word. Okay, I mean, one of the outstanding examples is, of course, the verse in Yeshayahu where they see a young lady going by, right? And Yeshayahu, so they see this girl, this young woman, this Alma, right? and she's going to bear a child, and the name is going to be Immanuel. Okay. So then actually along came the Goyim, and they said, see, there says the virgin. It doesn't say virgin. Alma is not a virgin. Alma is a young woman, that's all. Elam is a young man, and Alma is a young woman, so on. So, you know.
Stole it from the
right.
Greeks and so on. So, involved.
Yeah, correct.
Some Greek kings were considered virginal births, too. But
Yeah, right. And in biology, they still have what they call parthenogenesis. Parthenos is the Greek for a virgin, okay? And Genesis, of course, the birth of. Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Right. Okay, so these are Minim. Whom are Soros? These are Jews who denounce their fellow Jews from the government for whatever purpose it may be, okay?
Rebel.
No. Informers.
The informers, and in order to destroy Jewish Jewish reputation among the Goyim, Osiris, right? And even in Yiddish, the word means Aboser, it's Aboser. This is the singular of this word, yes. No.
No.
These are people, right, who would inform to the Roman government in order for their own gain, whatever, right, yeah.
Right, they would inform on others.
Right.
And, hope to gain their property, confiscated property.
Yeah. No, Mosser. This is the word that we have over here, Mosseros. This is the plural of it. This has nothing to do with the word Mosser, which means tradition, obviously. Yeah. It's a different meaning over here. They have Mumorim. Who are the Mumorim? These are the people.
Apparently.
Mosser?
No, Mosser.
Mosser. Mosser. For what? The plural of what word?
Getting this wrong. Okay, Moser the noun.
Moser as a verb means somebody who hands over something. I mean, this is the idea. But the Talmud over here, they use the word Mosur.
As a
noun, right? The person who is.
That is the person.
And that's correct.
On
Moseros,
right. Say Rodef Moser. Am I getting this wrong?
Rodef Moser?
Yeah, you know, the, that's what they used against Rabin, you know, as they would call it.
Ah!
You see what I'm saying, trying to say? So it really is Musar? What is the actual, they're using here, Masur, so it's actually Rodef Masur, is that correct?
I guess that's what they had to buy. But it depends what it's called, you know. The Rodef they were using in a different sense anyway.
Right,
you know, right. They were using the word Rodef to mean a person who's out to kill you.
Right.
Right. He's out to kill you, so he's a Rodef. Okay.
But the object of it should be Masur, not Moser.
It should really be Masur. Yeah. Ah, but of course, Masur is also an adjective. And what is Masur? Masur as an adjective, it means devoted, dedicated.
Yeah, Masur.
Yeah.
So
Masur Nehemim is that's what we're talking about. So Masur Nehemim is exactly what we're talking about, that you snitch on somebody or you... Right. Correct. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. Well, Aden Zolomin is somewhat different. I mean, they make a claim which is absolutely false to begin with, you know. Yeah. But here, they're snitching on someone. Here, he's snitching on fellow Jews in order to ingratiate himself with the government, with the authorities, with the Goyim, whoever it may be. And said, okay, so it says, and with these kind of people, who are much worse than I didn't translate the word Mumor yet, but... Mumma means literally someone who has changed. However, again, we'll see that the word really has more significance to it than that. And as we go down the blot over here, we'll see how they define these words, okay?
There are three different words,
right. So in their case it says, Hoyamoridin, they would lower them, below Malin, and they wouldn't let them come up. Okay.
They would actually lower them.
Yes, right. In order to try to get rid of them so that they shouldn't do any damage. And in that particular case, that's what their punishment was.
Right.
So, at any rate, when... okay, well, it was Rabbi Bo who said this, the president of Rabbi Yochanan. So he said to him to continue, Ani Shoneh, I learned that where the Torah says, L'chol avidas ochicha, that in other words, a Jew is obligated to return anything that has been lost to his fellow Jew, the rabbis es ha-mumar. I interpret it to mean that this includes also the mumar as well. Even though, you know, you say that he deserves the at abrat, and you say, oyum oridin, that they would lower them into the pit. I say, how could that be? I mean, if a mumar is still a fellow Jew. Okay, one who changes doesn't mean one necessarily who converts, as we'll see. But although they do use the term today in that sense, okay. But in the sense in which the Gemara uses it, it means that he has a total disregard for Jewish law, Jewish practice, and
how
so on and so forth.
The
Min is actually a member of a group that's actively opposed to Yiddishkeit. As I say, like the Christian church. Right.
So
Muma, right. It doesn't care about observing any mitzvahs. So we'll see specifically some of the things.
Would you say that it's some of what we would call the apikoros today?
Well, people say, Muma got apikoros. I don't know if you ever heard the expression or not. Whatever. It's not meant as a compliment, as far as their observance of Yiddishkeit is concerned. Okay? So, it says, look, I learned that the whole of it is a chicho, this includes a mumar, and you say that they lower them? So, what was the answer? Sameh mikan mumar. Okay, let's erase the word mumar from this, so that we're left with what? Just with minin and masoras, right? Okay. Well, now another suggestion is made, maybe. Maybe we shouldn't take it out. The Lishtilei, maybe we should still include it. But who are we talking about? So we say, Kan b'mumor oichel nevelos l'sayolein, and Kan b'mumor oichel nevelos l'hachis. In other words, there are two different types of mumorim. Okay? Two different types. There is the mumor that, for example, he feels like eating a piece of trefa flesh, okay? He goes in the place, Burger King or something about it. That's a trefa hamburger. Okay. That's the teyavon. But teyavon, you know what teyavon means? Teyavon means appetite, okay? How do you say in Hebrew, how do you appetite? But teyavon, okay? Yeah. No, what am I going to tell you? It means non-kosher meat, period. Okay? He's not kosher food. And he does it because he feels like eating it. Okay? So that's one kind of a mumar. It's a mumar, the teyavon. Okay? But there's another kind of a mumar, and that's the mumar, eichel nevelis lahachis. In other words, he purposely does it because he wants to spite Yiddishkeit. He wants to show you contempt for Yiddishkeit. In the Mumar L'Tayyavon, Achachomim say that if he has the opportunity to eat either kosher food or non-kosher food, then he'll select the kosher food. But if it so happens that kosher food is not available, so what he'll do? So he'll eat non-kosher food. You understand? Whereas the Mumar L'Hachis, he wants to show his contempt for Yiddishkeit by purposely eating chazer or whatever it may be, okay? Yeah. So, in other words, who would be ochicha? you know, the equation, right?
Right.
So where it says chavetz hachicha, so that would apply to the mumar l'tayovo. He's still a Jew because, as we said, if he has the opportunity to eat kosher food, he'll also eat kosher food. He's not doing it, you know, because he doesn't. You understand? Whereas the one who deserves to be put into the pit, this is the mumar l'hachicha. He's the one who does these things in order to spite Yiddishkeit, to show his contempt for Yiddishkeit. You follow me so far? Yeah. Alright, so now I say Kosovar, he was of the opinion maybe that Oichel Nevel is the Hachis Minhu. Alright, why did he say take out the word Mumor from the equation? Because he says a person who is eats Nevelis the Hachis, in other words, he's a Mumor the Hachis, so he's a Min. How do you make a difference between him? Right. Itmar Mumar. We learned it could mean that, yes. But it could also mean anybody went over to idol worship too, instead. But in general, we apply it, you know, to Jews who became good. Okay. So, let's see, where am I over there? Yeah, I feel the house, and I'm in move. Okay. Itmar, we have learned, Mumar, how do you define the word Mumar? So, Pelige Rav Acha Rabina, there's a difference of opinion between Rav Acha and Rabina. Chad Omar, one of them said, Twitaka talking about the Teyavon Mumar. In other words, a person, you know, who is a Mumar and that he eats treif. But Lahachis is Minhu. So in other words, we could still keep in the word Mumar if you wish, and so on. But Lahachis, there's no question that he is a Min. The Chad Omar, now wait a minute, he says, I feel Lahachis, even a Jew who does these things in order to spite, not a Mumar. He still remains a Mumar and he's not a Min. You understand? He's still a Jew. He's still a Jew. Even if he does these things. I mean, America is full of people. But they could be Mumarim L'Teyovon, Mumarim L'Hachis. You know, there's no question about it. But still, we normally define them as still being Jews, no matter how little they keep of Yiddishkeit. So, Ela Ezehu Min, so Taka, what does it mean? So he says, Zehu Evet Elile Kechovim, the person who is an idolater, right? This is a Min. As I said, I mean, they also applied this to Christians, but it could be also, you know, a person who actually decided that he's going to follow idolatrous practices, okay? Mesve. So now they bring in a kasha from another teaching that they have. It says, Ochal parosh echod, or yitush echod, areze mumor. If a person eats one flea or one mosquito, in that particular case, he is a mumor. In other words, are we allowed to eat a flea or against the law? They could say the same thing, eating a worm and so on and so forth. I mean, these things are prohibited by Jewish law.
Except for certain kinds of locusts.
Except for certain kind of locusts, correct. Yeah. So, he is a min. Okay. He's a mumor, excuse me. And here he's doing it in order to be spiteful again that he's eating it, and still we call him a mumor. So they give the following explanation. It says, Hasam boy lemitam, tamadu yasura. So there we were talking about the person who eats, and he says he's a mumar, he's not a min. Why is he a mumar? He's a mumar because he wants to see what is the taste like of something that is prohibited. He's not doing it, in other words, despite, but out of intellectual curiosity. Let's see, what does it taste like? Omamar. So, the sage said, Hoyu Moridin Avolomalin, right? That they would lower them, but not raise them. Hashto, Akusi Machtivin, Sukimi Boy. So he says, why does if they say that they would lower them, so why do we have to say that we don't raise them? One would be enough, right? Omer Rav Yosef Bachobo, Omer Rav Sheshes, he says, the name of Rav Sheshes, he says, Loi Nitzvichu, the reason why they have, you know, that it says, Moridim el Omalin, right? Or Lomar and Lomaridim and so on, She'im Ha'isa Ma'lo Bebor, because if there was, let's say, like a step in the pit, Negara, he could rub it away. Denokatli Ilov, and give the following excuse. The Omar, he would say, Lo Seichus Chiyusu Aluya, says, I have to be careful that an animal doesn't fall down into it. Rabbi Rav Yosef Tamit Abayu, Lord Nisvichu said, no, we don't have to make this distinction. She'im ho'yisa evin al pi haba'er, so that they have a different answer. If there was a stone covering the well, then machasa, then in that particular case, he covered it over. And what is the excuse that they give? Omar ma'avure chiyusa alei. I want to put the stone there so that the cattle can walk over it, not fall in. Okay. Radi Namar, he said, She'im hoya sulam, if there was a ladder over there, Misalko, then he takes it away. And what excuse does he give to the person? He says, Amar be'ino lachutze b'ribayigra, he said. He would say, I need this ladder right now because my son is up on the roof and I have to get him down from the roof. So,
well, you said before.
Yeah, right. So these are all excuses given as to why they shouldn't help him get up out of the pit. All right. Again, I have to tell you, I mean, reminder, it's not quite in accordance with our own ethical concepts that we have today. But apparently, in those days, suffering
at the Rabbanim are condoning or they have the right. They're talking about the Rabbanim who condoned it.
Right, right.
The right, way to
right, right. Because they felt that it was necessary for the defense of Yiddishkeit. Defense of Jews or the defense of Yiddishkeit? Obviously.
You know, it's not left up to the ordinary citizen to make the sentence, the czar deen or whatever, to put one of these people in a pit. Who's actually
you ask a very pertinent question, so we have to presume that the person, you know, who was treated this way had been brought before a Beis Din before, and people testified, you know, to the nature of this person or something like that. You're right, you can't be a vigilante in this particular case.
Now, what about in communities where the head rabbi, shall we say, was like the court and the judge in the court himself? Didn't they used to do that in smaller communities?
In general, a person should not be a judge by himself, certainly not in serious matters. You could be a judge if it's a question of, for example, is it kosher, it's not kosher, or if it's necessary, let's say, to testify to the fact that the person actually was dead so that the widow could remarry or something like that, you understand? But, you know, to condemn a person to punishment, which is equivalent to capital punishment, for that you needed a best of the... We need witnesses. Well, you have to go through the whole McGillie, you know, in order to do this. Right, no question about that. But they don't really go into it in this particular case. Right. Right.
Now, all of this is very interesting when we're talking this whole story, and all of this that we just said, it has to do with a pit.
Right.
Going into a pit. And I keep thinking that it keeps echoing the story of Joseph.
Of Joseph, of course. There's no question about that.
Given the way they behaved,
right,
the brothers would have been severely punished for what they did because they were really transgressing.
There's no question they were transgressing. Of course, they did the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And what justification could you do? The fact that they felt that he was slandering them. Or they didn't like the kind of dreams, the way he interpreted that he was going to be the king over them or something
like
that.
But it also makes me think that this custom of throwing into pits must have been an ancient custom. If they did it at the time of Joseph, which precedes the Torah and all
right,
that,
of course it does. Right.
Then it must have been a custom.
That could very well be.
A form of punishment.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah, I don't deny that the possibility exists.
I mean,
right.
If it was in the Torah that it happened to Joseph.
Right.
I mean, it didn't come out of the air.
Right.
The pits and
no, I mean, they took advantage of a pit, obviously. But
okay.
I say they took advantage of a pit,
right. But I mean, I'm
right.
assuming that this might have been something that was going on in ancient times.
Okay, now we come into a different area, which we'll start now. Time is up. All right, anyway, I'd like to go a couple of more lines and then we'll call it a night, okay? Tanu Rabbanan, sages taught as follows. Yisrael mol eshoi veit kechavim l'shum ger. Poten halacha. A Jew may circumcise an idolater in order to enable the idolater to become a ger, to become a convert to Yiddishkeit. Okay, as we know, that to be a convert to Yiddishkeit, both male and female are required, you know, to be toivel. They have to go into the mikvah. Pardon me?
Skip the paragraph.
I skipped the paragraph?
No,
honestly, I didn't skip anything. Right. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, a Jew can circumcise a male goy for the sake that, you know, he should become a convert. Okay. This is done incidentally prior to going into the mikveh. The mikveh is the final step. Okay. However, it says, Va'afuke b'shum orano delo. But to circumcise a goy just in order to remove like a cancerous growth on him, that no. I don't have to tell you again. No. This is the idea, okay? That's a teaching. Remember, it says Tanu Rabbanan. We learned that as follows, okay? All right, but it doesn't mean that, you know, and we'll see in a minute, you know, the question about a doctor, okay? However, the Eved Kechavim, a goy, lo yamol Yisrael, okay? He's not allowed to circumcise a Jew, mipnei shechashudim ashvichas tamim, divrei Rabbi Meir, because they are suspected of being ready to murder a Jew. This is the words of Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim Aimrim, but the sages say, Oyved Kachovim Molas Yisrael Bizman Shachim Oyim Al Gabay. Aval Beino Leveino Lo. Which means that the sages say that a goy can circumcise a Jew when? when there are others who are standing around over there and other Jews are watching him, right? But just between the two of them, in other words, just the Goy and the Jew alone, that would be prohibited, okay? For Rabbi Meir, Omer, but Rabbi Meir, who, as we've seen, is a lot stricter in these relations, what does he say? He says, Afilo acherim omdim al gabei dabilei. Says, no, that's even if others are standing around over there, I say that the Goy should not be permitted to circumcise a Jew. Why not? The Zimnim, the Matzil Sakida, Meshavale Krushafa, because sometimes this Goy can, and we have to assume purposely, permits the knife that he's using, you know, to do an imperfect job, and as a result, he makes the Jew into Kerush Shavcha. Kerush Shavcha means that part of his penis is missing, and therefore, you know, he would be unable, you know, to have children. And the Torah says that, you know, Kerush Shavcha is not allowed to marry a Jewish woman, okay? So he might do it, you know, out of spite, in order to show and he thinks he can get away with it, you see. But Sava Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir then would be the opinion of Eved Kechovim Lo, right? Now they're asking the question, but does really Rabbi Meir think that a Goy is not permitted to circumcise a Jew? V'raminhu, and he would come to another law. We learned the following, that Yir She'en Bo Rofe Yisrael, if you're in a city which does not have literally a Jewish doctor, it means that there is no moel who is expert over there. Okay? The Yesh Bo Rofe Kusi, the Rofe Evet Kachovim, Yimol Evet Kachovim, Yal Yimol Kusi, Devi Rabbi Meir. Now, this again we have to distinguish between the Kusi and the idolater. The Kusi, if you remember, we learned that they were Jews who practiced, you know, some of the laws of the Torah particularly, but they did not have, you know, they had their own traditions and they did not follow the traditions of our sages. They were Kusi, okay? These were people who had come and they were transplanted originally into northern Israel, and we call them Samaritans today, okay? So, according to Rabbi Meir, he says, in a city where there's no Jewish doctor who can perform the circumcision, but there is a Kusi over there who has the ability to do it, and a doctor who is an Oved Kechovim, an idolater, then he would rather have Yimol Oved Kechovim or Yomol Kusi. He would rather have the Goy perform the circumcision and not the Kusi. Why? Because he feels that the Goy at least will do something that's right without spiting Yiddishkeit, whereas the Kusi, since he is a sectarian, you know, he may want to do things according to his way in order to spite. This is what they're saying, according to Rabbi Meir. But Rabbi Yehuda Emer, he has the contrary opinion. He says, Yimol Kusi, Yimol Oivet Kechovim, right? I'd rather have the Kusi, who at least is partly Jewish in his observance, particularly he's supposed to observe what is written in the Torah, even if he doesn't observe the oral tradition, right? But I would rather have him do it than to have an idolater do it. So we see there's a difference now between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda about this, right? So they say, Ipok, all right, turn around the other way. In other words, let's say then that Rabbi Yehuda says that, okay, I would rather have a Kusi, I would rather have an Oivei Kechovim and not a Kusi, and Rabbi Meir would say, no, I would rather have the Kusi and not the idolater. So they say, wait a minute. Rabbi Meir Omer, in other words, it'll come out that Rabbi Meir Omer Yomol Kusi v'lo Eved Kachavim, and Rabbi Yehuda Omer Eved Kachavim v'lo Kusi, right? So this is the way changing it around would come out. Namely, that Rabbi Meir now is the one who says that the Kusi can perform the circumcision, and not the idolater. Rabbi Yehuda Emer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Oved Kechavim Veloy Kusi, right? But Rabbi Yehuda, he said before, what? That the idolater and not the Kusi? Silver Rabbi Yehuda, Oved Kechavim Shapiadovi. Does Rabbi Yehuda really believe that a goy is preferable in the situation to a kusi? V'hot Tanya, didn't we learn someplace else that Rabbi Yehuda Eber says, how do we know minayin lemila v'yoved kachovim shehi pasula? How do we know, he says, that mila which is performed by an idolater, it's no good, it's pasul, as we would say, it's invalid, because Shenemar, Pasuk says in connection with circumcision, the Yato is Brisi Sishmur, right? Says, Medi Shalelam says to Avraham Avinu, what does he say? The Yato is Brisi Sishmur. You are to observe my bris, my covenant, right? So he says, Elul Yoylam Lo Sipa. So, therefore, don't reverse it, but keep it the way it originally was. Okay, and I'll just do a couple of words orally, and then we'll go start next week reviewing this again, please God. It says, why? What are we talking about when we mention the Rofe, who is a goy? We're talking about the Rofe Mumche. What is a Mumche? Mumche is somebody who is a specialist. In other words, he's very experienced, he has the knowledge and everything else. So, if you don't have a Jew in the community, and you do have somebody who is, you know, a specialist in this, then in that case, it would be permitted to have him perform the bris. Well, we'll stop at this point. Tonight is the 12th of January, the year 2005. Hopefully the weather will improve as the weeks go by. And we are now continuing on the top of Maseches Avodah Zorah, Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, in other words, 27a. Okay, and we're in the midst of the discussion about Mila, about circumcision. All right, and we just determined that if there is no Jew who is an expert, there's a difference of opinion as to whether a kusi or a novit koychovim, a kusi or an idolater is preferable. And we said that according to Rabbi Yehuda, his opinion is that while in general he doesn't like the idea, but if you can't help yourself, then what? Then if you have an expert doctor, and people all around know, you know, that he is a doctor who is earnest, who is experienced, etc., etc., then in that particular case, it would be permissible for him to perform the bris. Well, obviously, we're in the midst of a controversy. And so, it's written, Chi osa rab dibi, when a dibi came, I have to tell you again, we find that again and again in the Talmud, that there were certain scholars who would like to go to Eretz Yisrael, and then they'd go back again to Babylonia, and they give them a report of what they had learned concerning the discussion that went on in the Eretz Yisrael yeshivas. Okay, so when Rav Dibi came, meaning they got back to Babylonia, so Omar Rav Yochanan, so he quoted, and he said that Rav Yochanan said, "Im hoyamum chenav rabim mutar," right? That if he were a one who is recognized by the rabbim, in other words, by people everywhere, as being a great expert, then in that particular case, it would be permissible for him to perform the bris in the absence of a Jewish man. So they say, "Besovar Rabbi Yehuda Kusi Shapir Tomi." And before we were juggling around, should you turn it around, say it was Rabbi Meir, not Rabbi Yehuda, or is it Rabbi Yehuda, or not Rabbi Meir, understand? So, now, you come back to the theory where you say that Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that a kusi is better than a goy. As I said before, The reasoning would be, that the Kusi, being a half-Jew, so to speak, the sectarian, but still he's some sort of a Jew, so that therefore he might, let's say, have a greater interest in performing a bris as a mitzvah than a goy would. So we find that why did they feel against the Kusi? Why did they say no? They said, Kusi lo yimol Yisrael b'pnei shemal l'shem ha'gerizim divrei Rabbi Yehuda. We find that Rabbi Yehuda says, well, wait a minute, you know the reason why we don't want a Kusi to perform it? Because he's going to perform it in the name of the idolatry that he practices on Mount Gerizim, which, if you remember, Mount Gerizim is it's in Samaria, right? And that's how they got the name Samaritan, because this is where, outside of the city of Shechem, this is where they go to celebrate. This is like their headquarters, so to speak. To this very day, the Samaritans celebrate the Korban Pesach on Mount Gerizim, yeah. And
where do they do? Mount
Gerizim.
With the
Mount
white gowns, with the white.
It's right outside the city of Shechem, the city of which the Arabs call Naples. We call it Shechem. And Mount Gerizim became the headquarters of the Samaritans. And every year, when Pesach comes, they go up to the mountain over there, and they shech the korban Pesach. And that's the way they celebrate the first night of Pesach. Okay, we don't do it because why? Because we don't have the Beis HaMikdash in existence. That's the reason why we don't. But as far as they're concerned, they don't hold for that. You see, they have their own Beis HaMikdash, so to speak. All right. So, because of the fact that should be there's. Say that in reality that they were worshipping a bird, an idol, a bird, and so on, so that therefore a Jew who worships idolatry is even worse, so to speak, than a goy who practices idolatry. This is the feeling, okay? So Rabbi Yossi said to him, tell me, where do we find that it is a mitzvah commanded by the Torah that you have to circumcise? The truth of the matter is, I am shocked at this question because we do have a reference to it. We have two different references to it.
The males among you, isn't there a very Abraham?
Yeah, okay. First of all, right, with Abraham, there's a whole chapter that deals with the idea of the bris. Okay? All right. So along come some of the commentators and they say, that's fine, but the Torah was first given where? Mount Sinai. Abraham lived before. So that being the case, where do we find in the Torah that there is a reference that it's a mitzvah to have it? Well, but that also was before the giving of the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all these are wonderful examples. Yeah. That circumcision already goes back to the time of Abraham and Moshe, etc., etc. But we're, so, as I say, I'm surprised that they don't quote the actual pasuk in the Torah where, at the beginning of Parsha Tazria, which is in the middle of the, Vayikra, okay? Over there it's written, that if a woman gives birth, the older Zachor, she gives birth to a male child, right? So then, Vayom HaShemini, Yimol B'Sar L'Nasa, on the eighth day, the flesh of his foreskin has to be circumcised. But here they're busy arguing a point. They're arguing, okay. Right. So, as a result, the question is, Place was asked the following question. take a look a little bit at the Tosfos, I'll just read to you a few lines over there. You know, so he says, Hachem Mashma. Here we find that Rabbi Yehuda, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, Apol gav deboy nivo v'shmo, right? That even though actually he is, he believes, you know, that bila should really be lishma. In other words, it has to be a mitzvah that you're performing for its own sake. That's what we mean by bila lishma. Okay? The place was over here.
Okay.
Right. And yet the machshavei be'evet kachavim, right? And nevertheless, he says that a goy may undertake to do it, as we said, you know, in the absence of a Jew. But we have specific other commandments where if a goy does it and not a Jew, it's absolutely no go. And Tosfos gives a couple of examples, okay? First of all, gives the example of a get. Divorce, okay? Divorce, you know, the get has to be written. Okay. In reality, the husband is the one who's supposed to write the get, but of course, you know, how many people are really skilled in writing a get? So therefore, he appoints the sofer, the scribe, you know, to act on his behalf. But he has to commission him that he is writing a divorce for the sake of his wife, but he has to specify what her name is, etc., etc., so that then, you know, why? Because the Torah says, the chos of the law, he should write for her, sefer krisus, which means a bill of divorcement, the nosam biyoda, has to actually be for her, and not for any other woman, and so on. It's prohibited, for example, to write a form and then just fill in the names or something like that. With a ksuba, it's permissible. I mean, you know that they print ksubas, and then all you have to do is you put in the name of the chos and the name of the kallah, the date that it takes place, etc., etc. And then what you do, you have to have finally the consent of the chosen, and once he does that, okay. But you could use a form. With the get, you can't do it. Everything, right from the very beginning of the get, has to be written, because it has to be lishma, it has to be for the sake of that. So, what would happen if you had a goy act as the writer, right? No good.
Yeah,
okay.
What a goy writer?
You're not allowed to. No.
Of course.
No. Then, they bring the example again of a Sefer Torah. A Sefer Torah can be written perfectly by a goy from the beginning to the very end, and still, what are we supposed to do with it? We're supposed to burn it. We're not supposed to use it, because it has to be written, lishma, has to be written by the scribe with the intention that he's writing it for the sake of performing the mitzvah, the holiness of the Sefer Torah. And when it comes to God's name that he has to write, and in that case, he even has to mention, you know, the fact that he is writing it for the sanctity of the Sefer Torah and so on. So, therefore, getting back to Nila, right?
Where are you?
Chav Zion Omer Alf, I'm doing the Tosfos at the moment.
So the Tosfos.
The Tosfos, okay.
So I don't see anything
right
in here about the Tzuba.
Yeah. Well, I'm quoting the Tosfos. I mean, that these are mitzvahs lishma. The question is whether circumcision falls in the same category, that if in the absence of a Jewish male and you can't get hold of one, may a goyish doctor perform it? This is what we were dealing with the last time, okay?
Yeah.
And the answer is yes, permission is given, but it's not the... It's not a situation, you know, that we would wish for, okay? So this is what we're saying over there, okay?
Could you have a Goyish doctor for the performance, have the father stand by and say the brachas?
Well, they were discussing the
brachas. Well, there are two brachas in connection with Mila, okay? one of them is essentially, yeah, the correct bracha would be Asher Misham Tzavat Tzivonu L'mon Esben. Okay, praise God who has sanctified us and commanded us that I should circumcise my child. Okay, but how many Jews are capable of circumcising their own child, right? So that therefore instead the Moel recites a bracha with Tzivonu or father. Tzivonu or Habil commanded us simply concerning, you know, commanded us for circumcision. All right. So obviously, from my point of view, circumcision is a mitzvah. And it has to be a mitzvah lishma. But as you can see, they're trying to figure out the case, you know, where it was absolutely impossible to get one locally. And don't forget, you know, it wasn't that easy to communicate or to travel distances in order to do it. And so therefore, they consider the possibility that if the person was a Rofei Mumche, in other words, a doctor who was accepted by everybody as being an expert doctor, that he wouldn't do anything awry in order to kill his reputation. So then they permitted it, you know, as we would say, but he haven't. Okay, in other words, he did it. Okay. Today, I have to tell you, let's say a doctor performed circumcision in the hospital. Okay? Jewish doctor, Goyish doctor, whatever it may be. If it wasn't done by a moel, we might require what we call hatufas dam. In other words, have to take a tip of blood, a drop of blood from the, you know, from the child or from the male if he wants to become converted later on in life, even though he is or has already been circumcised, and so in order to be accepted. Okay. Correct, 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 right, yeah.
And a whole generation of American Jewish kids who went through that, then later on wanted to be more authenticated. So
right, right, right. So we have
they used
Hatovas
to do it
automatically
in the hospital.
Yeah, that's right. There was a time when they were. Now we have Jews who they campaign against circumcision. Dr. Riedel, for example, that's one of his pet. Dr. Riedel. He's always talking on the radio. You know, people ask him all kinds of questions. But this is one of the things, one of his causes to fight circumcision. It's going to traumatize the child, right?
Well, of course it's traumatized. They can't walk for a year.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I guess you mean it's not no longer hospital policy to have circumcision automatically?
No.
Because they don't stay 8 days.
On the contrary.
They don't stay in the hospital 8 days anymore. Years ago, they did.
And they
even...
You only stay in the hospital for...
Overnight, three days,
I think, max.
3 days? Yeah. Well, you're lucky. They do overnight.
They were less than a day now.
Yeah,
they overnight.
Yeah.
Kick the baby out, kick the mother out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
had one
to get back to our text right now. Okay. So, what do we see? So, according to Rabbi Yehuda, right?
Yeah.
We see that... Well, wait a minute, why do we disqualify a Kusi? Because of the idolatry that he practices by turning to Hargrizim and whatever idol they have over there.
Right.
And Rabbi Yossi said, but where do we find that the commandment of Bila is written in the Torah? Milo. So he says, Elamol Maharle. So in other words, Rabbi Yossi is saying, all right, let the guy circumcise. Ashatesin Ishmosi, but he should croak.
Right.
The guy who is performing it, he should croak. Right. Passover. I should taste in this. So he says, so wait a minute, let's go back again and reverse it once more. Get off Kinami Yakura the way we did it before, with the Kakasha, the Rabbi Yehuda, and now that we have two different statements of Rabbi Yehuda, one saying yes and one saying no. How do you get out of that one? So they say, Ahi the Rabbi Yehuda Nosihi. Oh, he says, we're not talking about Rabbi Yehuda Stab. Rabbi Yehuda, there's a Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai. So that usually when they simply speak about Rabbi Yehuda, it's Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai. Whereas if it's the other Rabbi Yehuda, then it's Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi.
Oh,
okay.
They lived in different times, right. Didn't they?
Yes. They did.
Yeah.
But the question is, you see, Rabbi Yehuda, nothing else over there, so which
yeah,
Rabbi Yehuda are
like
we talking about?
Contradicting himself.
Right. Yeah,
so.
Right.
I see.
Yeah. Like yesterday, we had a yahrzeit. Take a listen. Take a look at my list of the yahrzeits. There are two women, Chana Bas Yaakov, Chana Bas Yaakov. So when I made a mole, I made for both Chanas Bas Yaakov. Of course, I knew also that one of them is powder, the other one is bean. So they're not the same woman.
Unfortunately, you know who they
right,
are.
Right. But, so Rabbi Yehuda, fine. There could be other Rabbi Yehudas as well, but these two are the most prominent Rabbi Yehudas. Okay. So it's Rabbi Yehuda Yitanya, he says, because we have a teacher that says Rabbi Yehuda Nosi Yomer, right? He says, how do we know that if Mila, if it's performed by an idolater, by a goy, is no good, it's invalid? Talmud Lomar. Because the Pasuk says, of course, this is in connection with Abraham Avinu, which we cited a moment ago, where it says, V'ator es brisi sishma. You are to observe my bris. In other words, a Jew has to observe a Jewish bris in accordance with Jewish tradition, according to the way Abraham Avinu did. So Amar Rav Chista. So Rav Chista said, I tell him to Rabbi Yehuda. What is the reason why Rabbi Yehuda, for example, says as follows, you know, that if it's done by a goy, it's invalid. He says, Nichsib, because the Pasuk says, Lashem Himo. In other words, unto God, and then
God
circumcised. All right. Now, the point is, however,
I don't understand.
We find,
that.
Okay. You have to go back to the. Where in the Torah is it written? Okay? All right. Excuse me. Pardon me.
Shemos.
Okay. In Shemos, right. It's written over there in connection with the Korban Pesach. So the end of Parsha Bo. As a matter of fact, we'll be reading it this week. Very end of the Seder. Okay? Towards the end, we speak about, you know, after the Jewish people, you know, were told we finish the 10th plague and they go out of Egypt and so, and you know, so then it's written over there, you know, Zosu Kasa Pesach, this is the law concerning the Paschal offering and so on. So it has to be a male who has to, you know, perform the rites to begin with, and then it's so it's written over there as follows. It says, but you also Pesach Lashem, he is to perform the Paschal sacrifice for Hashem, right? Yimol, Yimol Kol Zachor, and then right after that it says, all who participate in the Korban Pesach have to be circumcised. No, that doesn't apply to women, obviously, but it means, you know, that any male who takes part in the Korban Pesach has to be circumcised. Okay? That's what the Torah says. So, because the Pasuk says, Lashem, actually there's a comma at that particular point, or a semicolon, whatever you want to say, right? But the very fact that the Torah, there's no punctuation. And so, Lashem, and that pasuk is followed immediately by what word? Himo.
Yeah.
Okay? Be circumcised. Okay?
Yeah.
Right. So if that's the case, getting back over here, all right. So Rabbi Yehuda then says, Himo, right? Lashem Himo. For Rabbi Yose, he says, Himo Yimo. Himo Yimo, because the next word after Himo is Yimo, which means he must be circumcised. But, according to Rabbi Yossi, it doesn't matter as long as he is circumcised as to who perform the circumcision. The Edok. Okay, let's get back to Rabbi Yossi. Oksiv La Hashem Himol. Isn't it written in La Hashem Himol, just as Rabbi Yehuda said? So he says, Ahu be Pesach Kisiv. Now that's dealing with Korban Pesach specifically, right? So, getting back to Rabbi Yehuda, the Edok, the other one. Nami Oksiv Himol Himol, right? The Torah. And, you know, the Torah says he shall surely be circumcised. So he says, and this is a very famous quotation that we have, it's Dibro Torah Kilishon B'nei Adam, that the Torah speaks in a language that human beings normally use. So don't, for Lashem Himol, but Himol Himol is something, that's the way, that we this is the way. This is the language of the Torah.
This is what
Torah
Rabbi
speaks
Rabbi
the way. Yeah, this is the way the Torah speaks that the human beings can understand it better.
You mean? What is he referring to?
Yeah, I don't understand.
What is he referring to there? You referring to the
two opinions. One says it's Lashem Himol, right? And the other one says Himol Himol. So, you who say Lashem Himol. How do you do Himol Himol? So he says, that's the way people speak. Those who say that Himol Himol means that can be circumcised by anyone, Jew or non-Jew, you understand? So what do you do with Lashem Himol? So he says, well, that means that when it comes to eating the Korban Pesach, this is when you have to have someone who is circumcised. So,
who is circumcised.
Right. Alright, Itmar. We learn following. So how do we know that Bila, that circumcision performed by a goy, is invalid? Can I get back again to the argument, right? So he says, Dora Bar Papa, Mishmei Rav Omar. Dora Bar Papa said the name of Rav. I don't know, incidentally, if you remember, but we have a Siyam,